Welcome back to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. We've got quite the action-packed morning ahead for you here. We're going to talk about some bills coming up on Capitol Hill that affect Park City citizens and area citizens, even if you live outside Park City limits. Then we're also going to have some big news about Bonanza Flats. I'm very excited to hear what's going to be coming about that. That announcement will be made by Park City, Summit County, and Utah Open Lands, so stay tuned for that. That should be coming up in about 15 minutes. And then we're going to hear from Terry Orr, the Park City Institute, and the Artistic Director of the Alvin Ailey Dance Institute, Alvin Ailey II. His name's Troy Powell. There's a great presentation going on at the Eccles Center tonight and Saturday night. So that's all coming up on the Local News Hour. We'll be right back.
Additional support for programming on KPCW is provided by Sammy's Bistro on Bonanza Drive, open daily at 11 a.m. Sammy'sBistro.com. Peterson Calder Real Estate, Berkshire Hathaway, selling Park City since 1989. ExperienceParkCity.com. Sean Potter, Estate Planning in Summit and Wasatch Counties. WasatchLawGroup.com, 647-5951. Done to Your Taste Catering, 22 years perfecting life celebrations, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
KPCW News Time is now 8:16. This is the Local News Hour on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodling, and joining me in studio right now is Park City Fire District Chief Paul Hewitt. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Renee.
We're waiting for Mayor Jack Thomas to join us to talk about some bills in the legislature. But while we wait for the mayor, let's talk about, first, the roads this morning. You drove in. What did you see?
It takes me about 40 minutes to get from Pine Brook to here. They're about as bad as they get. We have that sticky, wet snow that will even clog up a snow tire. So it doesn't get worse than this. It's a pretty bad road conditions out there.
So people should plan to take some extra time to get where they're going to this morning.
Yeah, even me giving myself 40 minutes from Pine Brook probably wasn't enough, as I spent, you know, maybe 10 minutes at a light. So yeah, give yourself a lot of time, get into town early, have a cup of coffee, enjoy your drive, and don't do what I did and make it an anxious filled drive in.
And speaking of anxiety-ridden morning commutes, yesterday was a rough one with I-80 closed, and you and your crews responded to that big tanker truck fire that happened overnight Wednesday into Thursday morning. Can you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, so the story is still unfolding, but the way it looks now is that there were two semi-trucks that were westbound on I-80 approaching the summit, and one was having a hard time getting up the hill, and so another tanker truck attempted to pass the one having a hard time and losing traction as he was attempting to pass. And the one that was attempting to pass was an 11,000-gallon crude oil tanker. The other truck that was hauling beer lost traction. Sounds like it started sliding backwards, jackknifed into the crude oil tanker truck, caused a rupture of one of the three tanks, and crude oil started to spew out. Within a short period of time, it erupted into flames and caught the beer truck on fire. And unfortunately, that gentleman died in the accident.
And do you know if there was road damage up there?
I drove past it yesterday. It was a little bit snow-covered. It does not look like there was significant road damage.
From what I understand, that's why the road was shut down for so long. They had to clear those big trucks out of there and then assess the road. And then you had all that snow falling on top of it.
Yeah, UDOT has to be very careful, as does Utah Highway Patrol, and they're the ones in charge of that, and you can't fault them for taking every precaution.
Well, while we wait for the mayor and wait for Matt Dias to come in, the assistant city manager, who's also going to join us on this conversation about legislation affecting Park City, can you tell our listeners just about some things maybe they need to be aware of with all this snowfall on their roofs, perhaps blocking vents, any safety precautions people should take?
The number one safety precaution is be aware of the overhead. You know, here in Old Town especially, we have homes that are very close to each other, and people will walk through the easements. As you know, we had a gentleman that was killed when a block of ice fell off of one of the roof lines. So, good morning, Mayor.
Good morning. I'd like to reiterate what the Chief just said about giving yourself a couple extra minutes, even driving from Park Meadows to KPCW.
We got you covered, Mayor.
Couple minutes longer.
It's all good. Take your time. You were continuing.
But so you know, the prettiest area on the planet, right? That's what we live in. But it does come with inherent hazards, and ice and snow is among the biggest of them. Be very careful where you park your car, especially now. We'll start going through some more freeze-thaw cycles as we enter into spring, and that creates these slabs of ice on roofs, and they'll eventually slough off, and they can weigh hundreds of pounds. They can cause a lot of property damage, and at worst, they can cause death, as we found out.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. Speaking of treacherous roads, Ethel just came in and handed me a note. I-80, horrible conditions. There's a bad accident on the eastbound lanes at Mountain Dell. So if you're expecting somebody to be driving up here from Park City, just be aware that they're going to be here late. I did hear from Wendy Fisher with Utah Open Lands. And she's going to call in. Yep, you got it. So she was going to be here in studio. She called and said she started driving up the canyon and turned around. And so no announcement, no matter how big, about Bonanza Flats is worth risking life and limb to get here.
Exactly.
So we'll have Wendy join us over the phone. Okay, so now joining us, Mayor Jack Thomas, Park City. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, good morning.
And Park City Assistant City Manager, Matt Dias. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
So we've got 13 days left in the 2017 Utah legislative session. And our listeners out there may not pay a whole lot of attention to state politics, but there are several bills that directly affect you. And part of the many things your local government provides is vigilance over what new laws are being proposed and assessing the impact of those laws on their citizens. There are a couple of bills Park City, City Hall, is following diligently. So let's talk first about House Bill 253. That's the one about short-term rental amendments. Who wants to take that one on? Matt, go ahead.
Sure. The city's been working over the last 12 months with the bill sponsor, Representative Notwell, on the short-term rental industry, to be honest. This is a sharing economy. We think it's here to stay. Park City's been dealing with this for years in terms of rental properties being a critical component of our economy in our community. However,
and you're talking about Airbnb, VRBO,
right.
HomeAway. That's
right.
What you
and
mean
a lot of property
economy.
Management companies that do this as well and have websites. But there are some areas in our community that don't allow for nightly rentals. And we have seen some adverse impacts of nightly rentals in terms of traffic and noise and trash. And so we always felt that these issues in terms of local control and land use authority are best decided by the people that live here. Neighbors speaking to neighbors, coming to public meetings, testifying before elected officials and city council, and kind of dictating what belongs in their neighborhood and what doesn't belong in their neighborhood. So this is an effort to allow nightly rentals in an owner-occupied dwelling in any area of this city. So this would preempt any local control about where these uses are allowed and where they're not allowed.
And let's talk about what those areas are in the city, because as you said, there are areas in the city that already allow this. Some do not. What are those that do not that would then have to under this law?
No, that's a great question for your listeners in particular. So, just looking at the map, Park City tends to be one of the more permissive jurisdictions in the state when it comes to nightly rentals. But there are large areas of the Park Meadows neighborhood. There are large areas of the Prospector neighborhood and large area of the Thanes neighborhood that don't allow for these types of uses. Even portions of Old Town, that don't allow for these uses that would now be allowed. So like Rossi Hill would be another example.
Right, exactly. And we know that there's consequences to the nightly rental component. I mean, we hear about it, everything from parked cars to unparked garbage cans. You know, it's an issue, and it creates more congestion, more issues for snow removal, more issues for cleanup and maintenance of the neighborhood. And you begin to lose the character of the neighborhood if you have too much of this sort of thing.
The testimony in front of the House committee that heard this bill, they heard from a homeowner in St. George who said he's been making $1,000 a month renting out his basement. His family lives on the top floor. He rents out the basement. And he said this teaches entrepreneurship and self-sufficiency to his family, and that the party house, the parking problems, the trash problems don't happen because he's owner-occupied. He said, I don't want to live with that. My family doesn't want to live with that. So do you feel like this bill does make it's a better bill than maybe what we heard last year, in that it does require the owner to be occupying the residence while the renters are there?
Right. Indeed, that is a better aspect of it.
But you still have concerns.
Yeah, of course. I mean, death by a thousand cuts to some extent. You know, anytime the legislature takes a shot at local control, we're concerned. You know, we're a small town. We have people that show up at all of our city council meetings and our planning commission meetings and are concerned about these issues. Where is it better to address these issues?
interesting that our state doesn't like the federal government imposing its laws, but then the state wants to impose its laws on municipalities.
That is interesting, isn't it?
And I should add that we've had the bill sponsor has been, although we may disagree philosophically, he has been very good to work with. He's been a very honest broker. And we've also had some great local representation in terms of Senator Kevin Van Tassel and Representative Tim Quinn. Both those individuals, you know, I think the mayor speaks to them two or three times a day this time of year and have just been wonderful to work with on this issue and several others.
They have indeed, and they have our back with regard to these issues.
Utah League of Cities and Towns also representing your side of this issue, right?
Yes.
And they represent all municipalities. Do most municipalities in Utah belong to Utah League and Cities and Towns?
They do. I think just about every single one does.
Chief Hewitt, is there anything you want to chime in when it comes to fire inspections or safeties with nightly rentals?
I don't know. I think, you're just going to get my opinion, and for what it's worth. I think we have a lot of freedoms here, and I think they have to be managed in some regard because they all have intended and unintended consequences. I mean, nightly rentals, from a fire chief's perspective, they're going to be far more apt to park in front of hydrants and block access and things like that. So, but I don't know. That's why we have people far smarter than me managing these issues.
You looked at Matt or Jack when you said that?
Kind of generally throwing it back over there.
Nodded in that direction. Shall we move? Anything else you want to add on that bill?
I would just add, for the benefit of the public, it has passed a House committee, and it passed, I believe, on the House floor now, and so it will go to the Senate and will be up for their consideration. And at this point, every bill that's been passed in the House is still getting a Senate hearing, so there's about 2 weeks left of the legislature for the benefit of our listeners.
So another bill that just passed the full House and heading to the Senate is House Bill 281. This is sponsored by Representative Paul Ray from Clearfield, a Republican, who says it's just simply a cleanup bill to simplify building codes when it comes to fire safety. But Park City's name has been invoked in the two hearings this bill has had so far in Capitol Hill. Why are we singled out in regards to this bill?
Well, a real quick history, because I know we're running out of time, is that Park City has had some requirement for residential sprinkler systems since the early 80s, but those were a little spotty through Park City proper. In 2006, a blanket requirement through the International Residential Code came into being, and we've had that blanket requirement for residential sprinkler systems here in Park City. We are a very different jurisdiction, especially here in Park City proper. 71% of our homes here are vacation rentals, so those sprinklers serve as babysitters for us. And we developed our entire strategic fire plan with those residential sprinklers in mind. So all of our water mains have been designed around the functioning and the requirement of those residential sprinklers. So we disagree with the assumptions that he's made, and we say that it's actually a very a big deal to Park City. It is a life safety issue.
So this bill would prohibit municipalities from requiring fire sprinklers in residences. Is that right?
Indeed, but in particular Park City. There's a special provision within the state fire code that allows Park City, for a lot of the reasons that the chief just mentioned, our topography, the complexity of our water system, the density of Old Town, the interface with the forest. So for those reasons, we were given this special provision because of our uniqueness. And so this bill, one of the things it would do, because there are a lot of sort of cleanup measures, and one of the things it would do is it would specifically strike the Park City provision.
And I'm going to put on my Leslie Thatcher hat here because she's always good about taking it down to the money. This could mean it has the backing of the Utah Home Builders Association. However, this could create impact fees for home builders in Park City, because if we have to redo our water system, reposition where our fire stations are, then that means you, Mayor, are going to have to tell builders,
well,
pay up.
May indeed go beyond that, because if we have to invoke the wildland urban interface, you know, we may be requiring non-combustible materials on soffits and fascias and walls that face adjacent properties or significant vegetation. So, you know, that has a bigger consequence in my mind as a builder, as an architect, than paying a buck 25 square foot for a fire sprinkling system. So I don't think they've looked at this very carefully. We certainly didn't have time to discuss this or raise these issues. This was kind of happened behind our backs. And we're not very happy about that aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're doing what we can right now.
Another point to this bill, and I tried reaching Representative Ray, and I've also tried reaching Taz Beisinger with the Utah Home Builders Association to ask them this question. They said, Taz said in his testimony in front of the House committee, that there are loopholes that provide exceptions for urban wildland interface. And I'm looking in the bill and trying to find those exceptions and trying to figure out what
that
means. We
had that conversation with Taz, and we disagree. It doesn't go far enough. It would be a quagmire to put it bluntly, to try to enforce these codes the way that Taz is suggesting that we enforce them. He makes the argument that, hey, you can require firewalls too. A firewall is far more expensive than a sprinkler system. This is a far more complicated discussion that we could have on this. It goes into the glycols that are used as antifreeze, and we've said they've improved that mixture immensely. They've improved the rubber seals in these sprinkler systems. It's not the world that we lived in 10 short years ago, so we've been trying to work with them and give them some creative suggestions about how we can meet in the middle.
Anything else you guys want to add about this bill?
So this bill, just a little for the benefit of your listeners, this bill will be up for consideration in a Senate committee, most likely the Business and Labor Committee. We have obviously worked closely with Representative Tim Quinn and Senator Van Tassel that both support, and we're very appreciative that both support our position on this. So
they've been very helpful.
We're going to keep working this issue, but we want to make sure that the public's informed, and that's been our gravest concern with this, is that this is something that probably should have been handled locally, but unfortunately was taken down to the legislature, and so we're dealing with it now at the last minute.
I think your listeners could help just by pinning out a quick email and telling them that they support the mayor and the city manager's office and the fire chief and trying to get, it's line 288 actually, we want that reinstated. They've stricken that line in HB 281. So contact Paul Ray.
Contact Paul Ray. Also contact Representative Logan Wild, Representative Tim Quinn. And if I saw correctly, they both voted against this bill when it was on the House
Indeed.
Floor. Yeah. So they're voting against it, but it doesn't hurt to give them the word that you support them in that decision. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with some big news about Bonanza Flats. Please stay tuned. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The time is 8. Welcome back to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. The time is 8:34, and we've got some exciting news coming down the pike. It's regarding Bonanza Flats. Bonanza Flats is the 1,400 acres of land that sits on top of Guardsman's Pass. It is the southern border of Park City. The land's actually in Wasatch County, also abuts Salt Lake County as well. That last fall, Park City voters approved a $25 million bond that would allow the city to buy this property. But then fast forward to January, the price tag came in, $38 million. That means we needed to raise $13 million and quickly. I think we have less than 3 weeks left to raise that money. So we have Park City Mayor Jack Thomas here in studio. He's been with us all morning. Thanks for being here, Mayor.
Thank you.
And now on the phone, we've got Wendy Fisher with Utah Open Lands and Summit County Councilman Chris Robinson. And I understand, Mr. Robinson, this announcement's coming from you. Take it away.
Thanks, Renee. Well, ever since Park City announced that they were successful in getting Bonanza Flats under contract from Wells Fargo Bank, you know, we've been trying to figure out how we can help. And I'm pleased to announce that the county council has worked hard in the last few weeks to come up with a proposal where we can contribute in a combination of outright grant and some land exchanges and some other cooperations, a total of $5.75 million, which isn't $13 million, but it's a good start on the gap.
$5.75 million. Mayor, what do you think about that?
I think it's excellent. You know, Park City and Summit County have worked closely together on lots of issues, transportation, now housing, and open space. And I think it's you know, it's important to defining our communities and our character, and we're happy to be working closely with them on something that empowers their open space interests as well as ours. And in fact, I think all of our interests are inclusive, and so we're happy that this has been a successful relationship, and this is an example of what it looks like when it works.
And Wendy Fisher, would you like to chime in?
Absolutely. I mean, $13 million, right? who would have thunk in 60 days that this is something we could even come close to? And we have known all along that it would take public participation. And I think that all of the partners from Summit County, Salt Lake Public Utilities have understood that this is a critical piece for watershed, for recreation. But to have this announcement from Summit County of the actual dollar figures is a huge boost to the private fundraising campaign, which has been just ongoing and with a lot of support. Last night, we were at Gallery Mar with Bridget Meinhold's painting that she did specifically of Bonanza Flat, and we raised $23,100. We also have a $250,000 challenge grant that has just come out, and what people keep asking is, how are you going to get to the $13 million without public support? So to have this announcement, to go into the next phase of our fundraising with, as you said, 3 weeks left, knowing that we have substantial support from Summit County, is a huge boost to the private fundraising effort because it makes people realize this is actually possible.
And so, Wendy, with this $5.75 million coming from Summit County, you had $13 million left to raise. Where are you now on that thermometer chart when it comes to reaching the $13
million? Well, with the two different challenge grants that we have from a private perspective, Utahopan Lands has $550,000 in challenge grants. We have $111,000 in pledges, $253,000 that has been raised collectively with the nonprofit coalition. And we're doing an event at the Montage that is full at this point on Monday. And if we meet these challenge grants on Monday, we'll have over $1.1 million coming from the private sector. So we're still going to be dependent on having the support from Summit, from Salt Lake County and from Salt Lake City Public Utilities. But again, we have strong support from Summit County, and that is an extremely great way to lead this by example and to say, yes, this is important and we can come together. And we're hearing good things from those partners as well. So we still need to get up to that $10 million from a public perspective, but we're very close on that thermometer.
And Chris Robinson, where is the $5.75 million coming from?
Well, it's coming from a combination of grants from, we're doing some collaborative work on open space to allow some of it to come from our open space funds and to be spent within the basin. And it's also coming from some other funds. We're still working out exactly how we're going to pull it off. We wanted to come forward now because we think time is of the essence, and in order to show our support so that other parties can realize that this is achievable. But we need a couple of weeks before we can exactly come forward with how we're doing it. But I think the community will be pleased with how we're doing it, how we're working with the city to advance our respective open space.
And Mayor, is the city looking at any other creative ways to raise money for this?
Oh, I think that this has been very productive working with the county. And, of course, we're reaching out and supporting Wendy and the fundraising effort. I was very optimistic about Summit County's involvement here. I said that to Leslie. I was kind of hoping she would be here today so I could remind her of that. And I'm very confident that we're going to see Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County step up, Salt Lake City Public Works and Salt Lake County. So, I'm optimistic. I think we'll have more good news very soon.
And I think,
go ahead,
Renee, one of the things that I think Chris touched on that we're finding throughout this entire process is there's the will there, and it's really figuring out through the process and through the protocols that these different agencies have how they can get the funds. But the thing that's been amazing is just how quickly all of these entities have come together to do this. Just yesterday, we also got a grant from Sotheby's Cares, which is the philanthropic arm of the local Summit Sotheby's, for $4,000. again, here are foundations which usually have a process that are coming forward to provide funding. And that funding came specifically at the direction of local agents Nancy Tolman and Scott Maislish.
And speaking of Salt Lake County, Wendy, I understand you met with their Open Space Committee, I believe, last week, 2 weeks ago. I can't remember when. But I talked to Chris McCandless. He's a Sandy City councilman. He sits on that committee, and he said, wow, we really support this effort. But he thought legally that the county's hands were tied. And I talked with the spokeswoman with the mayor's office, Mayor McAdams of Salt Lake County. She said that they had their attorney's office looking into just statutorily what the county could do when it comes to putting money towards purchasing land that is outside of Summit County's boundaries. And then I talked to a county councilwoman who mentioned, look, to give you some perspective, last time our Open Space Committee and the county council for Salt Lake County put money towards open lands, it was about $250,000 to support 5 acres in Immigration Canyon called Owl Meadows, I believe. So even the sense I got was, one, we think legally this might be tricky, and two, even if we can figure out legally how Salt Lake County can give money to Park City to buy land in Wasatch County, it won't be a whole lot of money. What was your take from that Open Space Committee meeting?
Well, you know, my take from that Open Space Committee meeting is that, you know, people are recognizing that a lot of these open land parcels, these places that we recreate, don't have a jurisdictional boundary when it comes to the users and the wildlife. Right now, Salt Lake County is also considering a conservation easement that reaches over into Utah County. So I think the Open Space Committee doesn't have as many funds. It's true, we did the Owl Meadow project with the county on that, and we raised $450,000 towards that. So they don't have a ton of funds from an open space perspective. But let's think about what we've been doing in the Wasatch Mountains. We've been doing a Mountain Accord study. We've been doing Wasatch Tomorrow. And what those studies are all aimed at is solving a universal problem, which is the recreational use and enjoyment and the protection of this incredible asset that is literally less than an hour away from the downtown of Salt Lake City. So I think what I heard from the committee is we know that the money can't come from our Open Space Committee because there's a challenge there. But there's got to be a way for Salt Lake County to do this. And everything I've heard is they're looking into those other ways to possibly do this. Because, again, if we're going to put money into studies but not money into the implementation of what we all know we need to do, then there's no point in spending money on those studies.
And my understanding from Wasatch County Council, I listened to a work session that they had, that they support the purchase. The county manager, Mike Davis, had said, there's nothing that prevents one municipality from barring another municipality from buying land in their area. And he said we would treat Park City just like any other private property owner. Now, when it comes to trailheads, trails, parking places, that Wasatch County hopes to have some input on that. And the council mentioned that if there were development up there, and there are development entitlements on that land, that would allow for resorts. I believe it was 250 condos. One county councilman in Wasatch County said that those would sell for $2.5 million each, and that essentially Wasatch County is foregoing tax revenue up to $6.5 million a year. So Wasatch County said, look, we're supporting this effort financially by foregoing those tax monies. There's a lot of individuals, Wendy, that you said in Wasatch County that you are hearing from who support this effort.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that we've been working with the county on some open space initiatives that they have in places like the Northfields. There's no question that they have residents who value open space and who value the quality of life that comes from being able to view wildlife, to road bike, mountain bike, hike, backcountry ski in a lot of these areas. And so I think that they recognize that. The Brighton Estates Homeowners Association have challenged their own homeowners to come up with $5,000 in a challenge grant, so a total of $10,000. It is clear when you have that kind of commitment from the individuals in your particular county, and we're seeing it in Summit County, and we're seeing it in Salt Lake County, that really your constituents are speaking to what they care about, and I completely understand that there's, you know, the potential revenue loss. But I think also one of the things we have to look at with any sort of protection of open space is what are the long-term gains? Because if we lose these places that people play, if we lose these places that really define us as communities, and we become Anytown USA, then we've lost some of the economic drivers that really maintain our communities. And I think that's something that's going to come back to Wasatch County, Summit County, Salt Lake County, all of us on the Wasatch Front and back for decades and generations to come. And that's really what protecting Bonanza Flat is all about.
Chris Robinson, anything you want to add from a Summit County Council perspective as far as any communication with Wasatch County Council?
We haven't had any communication, but I don't fault their position. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Park City purchasing land in their county or any other county for that matter. And I think that they are giving up some tax base, but I think in the long run, I hope and I believe this to be true, that their citizens and the county government will think it's a good thing. In the long run, when you take the very long view of protecting that great open space for all the reasons Wendy's so articulately expressed, I think it's going to be good.
And Mayor Thomas, we were geeking out here in the newsroom reading some city council minutes from 1997, 1998, where city council was talking about the potential development up there. Indeed. And the impacts that would have on Park City as far as infrastructure and traffic. So even though this is outside of Park City's limits, Park City would feel the pain, I guess, if that area were developed.
In every way, it would be an impact to the historic character of Old Town. It would be an impact to this building and its existence. It was a solution that we never wanted to see. Okay. And so we're very happy that this is moving in the right direction, and I'm very appreciative of all of our partners, in particular Summit County, for stepping up in a big, big way. And, thanks, Chris, and the rest of the county council, because you've been awesome to work with.
Well, thank you for sharing that news with our listeners today. Again, the big news is that Summit County Council has agreed to put $5.75 million towards the purchase of Bonanza Flats. And we will be following the story. We've got 3 more weeks to raise what looks to be like the remaining $6 million. And we have Wendy Fisher from Utah Open Lands, Chris Robinson from Summit County Council, and Mayor Jack Thomas with Park City. Thank you all three for being here this morning. Welcome back to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley, filling in for Leslie Thatcher, who's been on vacation all this week, but she will return next week. We've got a snowy day out here in Old Town. It's a good time to enjoy some great music and great dance, get in from out of the cold. We got a real treat for dance lovers and music lovers both tonight and tomorrow night at the Eccles Center. The Alvin Ailey Dance Company 2 is performing. Joining me in studio is Troy Powell, the artistic director of Ailey 2, and Terry Orr with the Park City Institute. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in on this snowy day. And Troy, I understand you've been traveling quite a bit.
Yeah. We have started our tour in September.
And you've been to Hawaii?
We were just in Hawaii last week.
And then you went to?
Then we're here in Park City.
And you stopped in New York, didn't
you?
Yeah,
we stopped in New York for a few days.
I saw you on Good Morning America.
Oh, did you?
That was exciting.
That's a great piece.
Oh, thank you. That was a lot of fun.
Rock
of
my soul.
Exciting to do that, yes.
Yeah.
And that song has been going through my head all morning because I watched that segment this morning before we went on the air here, and that is some great music. So if someone out there might say, I'm not that into dance, what are they going to see and hear?
It's definitely a catchy song. Tonight, we're performing 4 works. We're performing a work called Stream of Consciousness, and we're also performing a new duet to our rep entitled Maker, as well as The Hunt and Revelations. And Stream of Consciousness, has choreography by a young man named Marcus Willis, who danced with the Ailey Company for many years. Maker has choreography by a woman named Layla DeRocher, and then The Hunt has choreography by Robert Battle, who is the artistic director of the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. And Revelations, of course, has choreography by Alvin Ailey. And it's the masterpiece.
This new one, Maker, has it been performed before?
Yes, it's been performed before. Actually, both Stream of Consciousness and Maker have been performed before. We started our tour out in September, so we premiered it then.
And as the performers have been doing this performance over and over again, what is that like as a performer? Do you just get this muscle memory, or do they bring something new to every performance?
Well, a little bit of both. These dancers are very well trained. A lot of them have trained since they were younger. And we bring in about 3 new choreographers a year, plus we have 8 or 9 works in our rep. So it has to be muscle memory because we only have 7 weeks to learn about 12 different ballets, of course. And each performance is different because each performance has a different story, especially Revelations.
And how many people are in the company?
12 dancers, 6 men and 6 women.
And all 12 are not in all of the performances?
All 12 are in Revelations. There are some works where we have a duet like Mecca. The Hunt has 6 men. Stream of Consciousness has 3 women and 3 men. But most of the other reps is everyone, all 12 dancers.
The performance from Good Morning America, where they had on these vibrant yellow costumes and fans and hats. I mean, it was just physically awesome, visually inspiring. Is that going to be done?
Yes, that's Revelations.
That's the Revelations one.
Yeah, that's the American classic that has been performed all over the world. And Revelations is very unique. It talks about Mr. Ailey's life story growing up in Rogers, Texas. So there is a definite story. And when I worked with Mr. Ailey, because I had the wonderful opportunity of working with him, he always told us to bring our humanity to the story, bring our story to his story.
It's great gospel music. It is, yes, there are spectacular costumes. This is not something that Ailey, too, performs all the time. So we requested that piece, that they perform Revelations. Ailey, too, and I'm sure there's no one from Ailey 1 listening to this, so I'll just say it.
Here we go.
Is my favorite company of the two. They are much edgier, younger, riskier than Ailey 1. And so the pieces that Troy is talking about, there'll be a different show tonight than tomorrow night in the first half of the evening. And again, these pieces are exciting new choreography in the world.
So if you are really into dance, you can go both nights and see something different.
You really ought to.
Yeah.
Yes.
And give us the logistics. Where, when, how much?
The Eccles Center at 7:30, and prices start, tickets start at $29. If you are a student in the Park City School District, tickets are always $5. And then there are tickets at $49 and $79. And the $79 tickets include a reception after the show.
And that is 7:30 tonight and tomorrow night. And the performance goes for about how long?
A little less than 2 hours.
Yeah, no one's going to fall asleep during this performance.
No,
That would be, yeah. They'd have to have something medically wrong with them.
And Terry, I understand the Ailey dancers have been a critical part of the Eccles Center history. Can you explain that to us?
They were with us when we opened in 1998, and they came out and performed in the Olympics. We were the only venue outside of Salt Lake City to have any piece of the Cultural Olympiad. And so we had Alvin Ailey and Palabolas Dance Companies perform. We've had both Ailey 1 and Ailey 2. And wait, say that. Say that out loud. Troy is making...
If it was 1998 and it was the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, then I was performing.
Then you were here. Okay, yeah. So we were just trying to decide how many times Troy might have been here.
Oh my goodness.
With Ailey 1 and Ailey 2. So, very exciting. And so as we are approaching our 20th year of the building, which is hard for me to believe, we wanted to make sure that we were bringing Ailey back again because it's something that's really been a magical thread through all of our performing history.
Troy, what is it like to perform at 7,000 feet? You're at sea level in Hawaii one day, you're in New York the next day, and then you come here and you're in the mountains. I mean, how do you and the performers deal with that?
You just don't think about it. I performed in this altitude, and it's you just really don't think about it. I mean, you prepare yourself very well, but I think the heart and soul goes into the dance, and you just don't think about it. Maybe afterwards, you drink
we
a
prepare.
Lot of water.
We have oxygen backstage.
Oh, do you really?
When Ailey performed during the Olympics, they... that piece of the company had not been to Utah before, and we explained that it was very high and very different, and they said, look, we'll be fine. And they went through four tanks of oxygen in 2 days.
Wow.
So.
And Troy, you have quite the history with the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. Tell our listeners a little bit about your background.
Yeah, it's a very long story, and it's a unique story. I met Mr. Ailey at the age of 9. And as you know, Ailey is very high volume in arts and education. And he came to my elementary school and handpicked hundreds of us for this program that they had. They had the money, they had the facility, they just didn't have the students. And he went out into the community, the inner cities. I'm from New York City, and he chose me to be a part of this program at the age of 9. So I was
one
of the first. Yeah.
What did he see in you?
I guess he saw that.
I didn't mean that question the way it sounded.
I enjoyed it. You know, at that age, you do it because you enjoy it. You know, I had been taking, I wouldn't say dance classes, but I'd been dancing probably since I was in the womb. You know, and, you know, I would put on little community dances. But as far as training at the age of 9, he handpicked me, and I became one of the students that was in the children's program, and then the junior division. Then I danced with Ailey, too, and then I danced with the company, the main company, for 10 years. And then I reversed my role and came back and worked with Ailey, too, and it was all part of giving back.
Well, great story, great performances. It's tonight, tomorrow, 7:30, Eccles Center, the Alvin Ailey Dance Company 2. You can go to the website, Terry. What's the website?
You can still buy tickets online, eccleshcenter.org. And, yes, if you've never seen Ailey, fix that tonight or tomorrow. If you have seen Ailey, you know why you want to come back.
Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Renee.
KPCW News Time, 9 o'clock.